Hey, it's Callie, and you're listening to the 51st episode of the Hippie Haven podcast. If you're new here, I release an episode every Wednesday related to living an ethical and eco-friendly lifestyle. I want to meet you where you're at, so we cover all sorts of topics, like how to make less trash, composting, urban beekeeping, secondhand shopping, backyard gardening, starting an eco-business, and much, much more. My goal is to inspire you to take action, both in your day-to-day routine and on a larger scale of community activism, because I believe that together we will make a difference. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe so that you automatically get each new episode right when it comes out. Today's guest is Olivia Webb of iFixit.com, here to talk about planned obsolescence and your right to repair. What does that mean? How do manufacturers prevent consumers from repairing their purchased goods? Who are the worst offenders? Who's not so bad? And most importantly, how to fix your stuff? We're covering all that and more. As always, you can find the show notes and transcript for this episode on my website, hippiehavenpodcast.com/051. Now for today's episode. What is iFixit and how did it begin?
So iFixit is the free online repair manual. Our mission is basically to teach the world to fix everything. So our goal is to have a repair guide online that's free and accessible to everyone for every device that's out there. We are most known for like our iPhone repair guides and teardowns and our tablet and laptop guides as well. But really our goal is to teach you to fix anything from your car to your coffee maker to your smartphone, basically, so that we can keep those things out of the landfill.
All right, so what does right to repair mean?
Right to repair is basically the right for consumers to repair the stuff they own. A lot of manufacturers, they follow a system called planned obsolescence, which is basically them planning to make devices that will be less usable or unusable within like a year or within a short amount of time so that you have to go back to them and spend more money. So the right to repair is just fighting back for the right to repair your own stuff that you have purchased so that you don't have to go and spend more money with these companies, or you don't have to send your device to the landfill or throw it away. You can just keep using it and getting more life and use out of it.
So what are some of the common ways that you see manufacturers doing this planned obsolete? I don't know how to say that. How do you say it?
Obsolescence, I think.
Obsolescence. Planned obsolescence. Or just preventing a customer's right to repair.
So the main way is that they will like lock you out of your phone. A good example that we use is the iPhone. Apple developed like a proprietary screw. It's called the pentalobe screw. And they use it only in the bottom near the speaker that's how you get into the phone. And so once you undo those pentalobe screws and get into the phone, the rest of the screws in the phone are all Phillips screwdrivers, which everyone has laying around their house, but nobody has a pentalobe screw because they developed that themselves. So the big thing is that they are using tools and developing tools to keep you out of it so that you can't repair it. We're also seeing a lot of batteries being glued into the phones so that you can't replace them. Because the thing is that people don't realize that the batteries are what's consumable, not the whole phone, but they're gluing in the battery so that the whole phone becomes consumable and can't be recycled.
And so if a customer tries to repair their own devices, for example, a lot of the times it voids the warranty, correct?
Yes, that's what they will tell you. It shouldn't. That's under the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. That's technically not legal, but they will put stickers and tell you, like in the phone, they'll put stickers to tell you that if you remove this sticker, your warranty will be voided, but they should not be doing that.
So with this specific Apple screw, for example, is it legal to sell screwdrivers for this screw in particular, or have they somehow made that illegal?
No, it's legal. We actually have developed our own pentalobe screwdriver to do that, because we do sell a lot of tools and parts to help you with the repairs. And so when we found out that they had been making these screws and putting them into the phones, we said, well, that's not okay. We're going to make a screwdriver that lets you get into it. And we use those in pretty much all of our iPhone teardowns and repairs as well.
You just mentioned some sort of act. Can you tell me more about that and any other laws here in the U.S. that are supporting or preventing the right to repair?
Yeah, so the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act is the one I just mentioned, and that is basically the one that just governs and controls all of the legal stuff behind warranties and how warranties work with your devices. There are a lot of other laws, like the copyright law is another one that comes up a lot with right to repair, because that is kind of what that's what manufacturers cite the most when you're trying to get past their software that prevents you from preventing the hardware. And so that's another one. The one that we cite the most often in our right to repair advocacy is, I'm not sure what the name of it is. Sorry. There's a law in Massachusetts that was passed in 2012 that required car and automobile manufacturers to provide the parts, tools, and information. So like schematics, diagnostics, any information to make car repair accessible to consumers. And that we talk about that a lot because that's the same exact thing we want for electronic devices. That's the same rights that we want. And so since it's available on cars, it would be easy just to transfer that to devices. And that's what we believe should happen.
And what are some of the ways that iFixit is advocating for the right to repair on a national political level?
Mm-hmm. So the main thing I think that we do is we provide that information and we develop and sell the parts and tools that the manufacturers are not providing. Most of the time we can't get the original equipment manufacturer parts from the stores. We do have a couple partnerships where we do partner with the companies and they send us the OEM parts. So like, for example, we just launched a partnership with Motorola and they send us their parts and the screens and the batteries. And then we sell them in kits with our tools so that you can repair your Motorola phone with their tool or with their parts and with our tools. But we also we speak up a lot in a lot of public spheres and places. Last week, our CEO, Kyle, actually spoke at an FTC hearing about right to repair, and they're nixing the fix workshop that's going on, which is just addressing this issue of right to repair. Every legislative season, we do a lot of work to raise awareness and help people be aware of how they can contact their legislators about advocating for right to repair and getting those bills passed.
And what are some of the different ways that iFixit is working to help the environment overall?
That's a great question. The main way is just that we want to keep these devices out of the garbage, out of the landfill, because they can be really toxic. And so we are just really working on encouraging people to repair their own devices by providing the information and the tools. One of the biggest ways that people know about us, besides searching for how to fix their things, is through our teardowns. So whenever a new device comes out, most popular, again, are the iPhones or the consumer smartphones. Our tech writing team will get a hold of it and take it apart. So they'll open it up, they'll take everything out of it, and they will document what's in it, what kind of chips are used, what kind of batteries are used, how things are adhered to the phone and to each other, what kinds of screws are used. They'll take some really beautiful pictures, and then they combine all of that information that they've gathered and use it to determine a repairability score. So that's just a score from 1 to 10, and the 10 is the easiest and to repair, and the 1 is meaning it's not easy to repair. There's a lot of glue, or, you know, it's just really difficult. So we have those for smartphones, tablets, and laptops. And so we just encourage people to kind of look those up and see what they're getting into, how repairable their devices are before they buy it. And we also work with some manufacturers who will develop a product or a device, and they will come to us and ask us specifically to tear it apart and do an assessment on it to see how repairable it is, because they value that as well. And they want to make sure that they are using sustainable design principles in their products.
Now, do you know what the average repairability number is for the devices on your site? Like, is it fairly easy for a total tech newbie to be able to repair, you know, a small issue on their iPhone or their laptop? Or is this something that, you have to have engineering background to be able to repair your devices?
Absolutely not. We have people from a wide range who attempt these repairs and are very successful. I actually, before I started working here, had never even considered that I could get into a phone. It just felt like a black box to me. And we get that sentiment from a lot of people. But once you kind of get past, our CEO likes to say, once you get past that first screw, it's super easy. And there obviously are some repairs that are more difficult than others. Depending on the device, you might have to micro solder some things and kind of learn different skills. But we have so many different people from different backgrounds who are learning to micro solder or are a teenager and are starting their own repair business, because once you get inside, it really is pretty simple, especially with our guides, because they are step by step and it makes everything super clear. So I would say on average, like for a smartphone, our average score is around a 4 to a 6, so maybe a 5. So they're super, not super easy. They're not the easiest thing in the world, but it is much easier than you would expect.
What is the most commonly looked up guide on your site?
I don't have that stat specifically, but I can tell you that the screens and batteries are easily the most common repairs that people need to do. Again, because people don't realize that their batteries are consumable and that they need to be replaced after a certain number of cycles. So that's always being done, but also, you know, people shatter their screens all the time. So, and that's usually those are the most common and generally the easiest repairs.
Now, you know, there's rumors that, you know, like Apple or other brands, they purposely make their old phones break down like right after they launch a new one. Have you found any truth to that? Do you see anything like that in the design of these devices?
Yeah, again, and that's basically what planned obsolescence is just setting up your device so that it breaks down very quickly, so that you think you're required to go buy a new one from them. We see that all the time. Again, a good example of that is the gluing in of the batteries, because once that battery has reached the end of its life, if it's glued in and it's difficult to remove, then nobody's going to be replacing it. They're just going to switch it out for a new phone. And so that's one example of how we see that, but that is definitely prevalent across the board.
What companies are supportive of customer repair? Where can we be putting our money to companies that care about our rights and about sustainable design?
Like I said, we partnered with Motorola to provide their OEM parts with our tools in our fix kits. So that's definitely where I would look. I know that we work with HP a lot on their devices to make sure that they're sustainable and repairable. So those are the first two that I can think of off the top of my head that I would send people to.
And then like as for clothing, I know Patagonia is mm-hmm. really into repairing clothes, and they even have seamstresses here in the US to repair clothes, right?
Yes. I was just gonna say, we actually partner with them as well, and we run repair clinics with them. We have a lot of guides on our site for clothing fixes as well, because we're not just for electronics and technical devices. We're a community-based wiki site. So anybody can get on and create or edit a guide on our site. So we've got a lot of guides about how to repair a zipper or how to hem your pants or how to sew a button. And a lot of those actually were done in conjunction with Patagonia for that partnership.
And what is your role with iFixit?
So I work on the outreach and advocacy team. We kind of do a lot of different things, but we run social media and marketing campaigns and just campaigns to everybody on the site about new products, about right to repair, about anything that's going on, you know, new teardowns and anything, and just kind of encouraging people to repair and to join the community of fixers that we have on our site.
And finally, where can we go to learn more about iFixit and to support your mission?
The best place is iFixit.com, where you can find all of our guides, our tools, teardowns, everything is on our site. And then you can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at iFixit, and then just by searching for iFixit on Facebook. And we have a really stellar YouTube channel as well, where we have how-to guides. We do video teardowns on there, as well as our online teardowns. And then we just have like tutorial guides as well on there.
And that's a wrap. Next week's episode will be a replay of a recent interview I did with Polly Barks for her 2019 Zero Waste Beyond the Bag Summit about grassroots activism and how to make a difference in your community.
If you find value in the Hippie Haven podcast, please share it with someone you know who'd be interested. You can leave a review on iTunes or whichever podcast app you're using, and also consider buying me a virtual cup of coffee to keep me going. Each podcast episode takes around 6 hours to create, and episodes cost about $50 each out of my own pocket. These costs include file hosting, editing, transcription for people who need or prefer visual content, and my own time of researching, drafting, recording, proofing, and promoting. Visit buymeacoffee.com/Callie, that's C-A-L-L-E-E, to support the work I'm doing with a $4 cup of coffee. Thank you all from the bottom of my heart for spending this time with me, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.